This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a special edition marking the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Okinawa, which began 75 years ago this week. New Jersey native Walt Burr would earn the Distinguished Flying Cross for his actions over Okinawa in his F-4U Corsair flying off the aircraft carrier USS Essex.
We took off in clear weather, but there was a front between the fleet and Okinawa, and our mission was to go to Okinawa, bomb it, and do some damage. The leader of our Corsair group led us into the front in a turn. Well, I just kept turning and came back out of the front and figured everybody. And when I came back out to where we had gone in, I'm all by myself. So I turned around, went back in the front, and started climbing. It can fly in the clouds, that's no problem. But I'm heading towards Okinawa. I didn't know what else to do, and I didn't know where anybody was. I finally came out on top of the front, and I was up at about 35,000 feet. Beautiful blue sky, nobody around. You maintain radio silence. I don't call up and say, where is everybody? I just assume they're, well, I don't know where they are. But anyway, I look around, and down behind me, there's a flight of Corsairs. They got on the radio saying, bogey, 12 o'clock high. And the bogey is me. Well, that was a group from another carrier, and they were all together and going to Okinawa. So we communicated, and they came up and looked me over to see if I was a real, not a Japanese in a Corsair. Anyway, I joined up with them, and we went on to Okinawa. Well, Okinawa was socked in. We did our best to bomb whatever we could bomb, and I flew with them through all this and then back to the fleet. When we got back to the fleet, why, the whole group of ships turned into the wind so you could land. I landed on the back on the Essex. The air group commander, the captain of the ship, called and ordered me up to bridge, because I was the only one from the Essex that got to Okinawa that day, and not that I did anything, only had one hole in the plane. Somebody must have fired from somebody on the ground on Okinawa. But anyway, I got up to the bridge and gave him my report, and that's all there was to it. Well, I could have gone back to the ship where everybody else went back and landed. None of them went to Okinawa from the Essex that day.
All the other Corsairs had come back to the Essex.
Yeah, and I could have gone back, but I didn't know. We were maintaining radio silence. It did what I thought I should do. I would have gotten to Okinawa all by myself and done it and gone back home, you know. But that, you didn't really want to be out there flying around by yourself, you know.
Yeah. Did that put a little lump in your throat when you realized that none of the other guys had ever gone?
Well, not by then, but it did when I first came back out of the clouds and saw that nobody was around. I said, what do I do now? Well,
yeah.
What I thought I should do is what I did.
Well, and a lot of things come to mind on that. I mean, A, you hear them calling out bogey, and you know it's you, and if they had acted too fast, they could have shot you down.
Oh, yeah, but
And what if you never encountered those guys? Well, what if you had gone by yourself?
Well,
you would have been in a more dangerous position,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. By that time, I was pretty much on my way to Okinawa.
And you mentioned you only had one hole in your plane.
Yeah.
Of all those missions you flew, how frequent was that you would end up with some holes in that Corsair?
Very seldom.
Did you ever feel them when they happened?
Yeah, you could hear them.
You act like this isn't a big deal. This is your life.
Yeah.
You're what are you, a 20-year-old kid?
I'm not even that yet. I can't vote. Can't buy a drink.
Uh-huh.
But at that age, you think you're going to live forever. Whatever's going to happen, not going to happen to me. It's going to happen to the other guy.
Uh-huh.
And it does happen to the other guy. If you get back home, it didn't happen to you.
That's true. But you also have a lot of examples where you almost were that other guy.
Well, yeah.
And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that you mentioned Okinawa, and your group was very prolific during the assault on Okinawa. Wasn't there a situation there where there was a position that you were supposed to hit that was really tricky to hit on the side of a mountain or something like that? Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
Tell me what's that whole story?
Well, when you're supplying ground support to the Marines or the Army, but in this case the Marines, we would go with bombs or rockets and or rockets, and sometimes with napalm, you would go and do your strafing or dropping your bombs, aiming away from our troops, not towards them. Well, there was a situation that they wanted us to drop towards them. They couldn't dislodge the Japanese from these caves and tunnels or whatever they were in, I don't know. And we did. The danger of overshooting and hitting our own guys was great when you do that. So you don't do that if you possibly can avoid it. In this situation, they said, oh, try it. So we did, and we didn't hit them. And we went pretty low before we dropped stuff, because we wanted to be darn sure we hit what we were aiming at and didn't overshoot. We didn't overshoot. We did it.
So what you're saying is if you're not accurate, it's going to cost American lives.
Yeah, right.
And so this was like a cave or a position the Japanese had on the side of a hill?
Right.
So you go super low. I mean, it almost sounds like it has to be the perfect shot. You're releasing a bomb that has to kind of slide into this cave?
Yeah, so apparently bombs needed to be able to do damage in the cave instead of the other side of the hill, which is just hill,
right.
Rock, whatever.
So the margin for error is pretty much zero.
Pretty much zero.
Yeah.
And if you go the other way, over your friendlies towards the enemy, that's the normal way of doing it.
Right.
And if you overshoot, it's no big deal.
But you couldn't do that in this situation,
right,
because of the topography.
Yeah, I guess. They had the problem, and they took it to us and said, can you do this? And we said, yeah, we could do it.
Even though you'd never done it before?
Right, well,
never trained for that kind of shot?
No. Well, but you knew what we needed to do, and we were able to do it.
Is that one of those where there's some relief afterwards?
Oh, yeah. Great relief to know that. Because we really can't be positive that we succeeded. You know, you don't get out of your car and look and see what you did to your bumper, you know. This all happens fast, and you get out of there. And the report was great.
With the dropping of the bombs in August of 45, hastening the end of the war, you know, a lot of guys have told me they really believe that that spared their life.
Oh, I firmly believe that, because, all right, they dropped the bombs at the end of the war, but the plan, we weren't coming home. We were going to be part of the invasion.
And you've already been bombing and strafing Japan.
Oh, yeah.
But now troops are going to come ashore. You're going to be flying more of those missions, and the opposition would have been...
The Japanese were going to put up a very stiff resistance, and if you got shot down, you might survive the plane crash, but the Japanese would have killed you in a minute, you know.
They weren't going to be taking any prisoners anymore.
No.
Not that they treated their prisoners well to begin
with.
Oh,
God, no. No.
Well, I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for giving us a little taste of what it was like to be a Corsair pilot. I know almost a couple of years ago now, you had a chance to go back to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
You had to fly off an old Air Force base. I don't know if that was, you know, if that stoked the rivalry between the Navy pilots and the Air Force pilots. To go from Castle here in your backyard to Washington, D.C., see the World War II Memorial and all those other sites with a bunch of other veterans. What was that experience like? What did it mean to you?
It meant a great deal. It meant a lot of people saying thank you by contributing the money that made it possible, plus the dedicated folks that made it all physically possible. They were wonderful. You didn't do what you did expecting wonderful treatment like that, but it was nice when it happened. It was nice to think that the hundreds of people that donated money and the dozens of people who donated their time and probably money to make all that happen 70 years later.
Well, I think it's an acknowledgement that we know we wouldn't be here without what you and all those other guys did. And I'm just interested, too, since the driving force behind the Honor Flight movement is to let guys like you see in person the memorial
yes.
built in your honor and in the honor of those who didn't come home. So when you're there at that World War II memorial and there's that wall of gold stars, yeah. what were you thinking about while you were there?
The guys that didn't come home, I had a roommate when we were on Maui in training. He was up on a training flight and had a mid-air collision, was killed. That was pretty personal. I was able to, we came in at the end of the war to Seattle. It so happens that Harold Habeneck was from Seattle. He was my roommate there in Hawaii. I was able to go see his folks and did. And we communicated up until the time they passed away.
That must have meant the world to them
yeah.
to hear from you.
And it was something I could do and did.
You proud of what you did in the war?
Oh, yeah. I wish I could have done more. I did all that I could do at the time that I was doing it. We were only risking ourselves. And if you're going to take on that honor of Navy fighter pilot, you're going to do what you got to do, and you don't give it too much thought. You just do it. At least we could, like flying our round robin. Sure, we could get shot down easily enough. Mm-hmm. Probably a lot easier than the Japs could sink the sub. But we just did it. Mm-hmm. We didn't give it. We don't sit there and say, "Well, that's dangerous." You just do it. Mm-hmm. That your whole mental thing is positive. Let me put it this way. If you did start thinking in that negative sense, you wouldn't be any good. Mm. You wouldn't do whatever you needed to do.
And you might get yourself killed.
Yeah. Well, you might get yourself killed doing what you're supposed to be doing, but that's what... You just did it.
How many World War II veterans have shared those same sentiments over the years here on Hometown Heroes? That was Walt Burr, decorated Navy fighter pilot. And for the final veteran we'll hear from today, the Purple Heart was the decoration that brought back the most memories. 75 years ago this week, he survived something that I don't know if any of us could ever really imagine facing. Hear his incredible story of survival when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.